Hello and welcome to the Writing Cast. I'm your host, Ivy Reisner, and this is episode 87, Crazy on the Outside. I'm sorry I haven't been podcasting in the last few weeks. I had a wisdom tooth become impacted, so it had to be removed. And for some reason, after that happened for a few weeks, I was just lisping every time I went to the microphone. So I figured just wait until it heals and then I would be back. And it's finally healed, so I'm finally back. And this episode is almost exclusively for the science fiction fantasy world building group. So if you're from any other genre, you're welcome to listen, but I don't think you're going to get too much out of this one. A few things happened, well, I'd say recently, but it was recently as of the time I was preparing the show notes, and now it's a little dated. And I'd like you to put on your alien observer hat and listen to both of them. The first thing is that a team of three biologists unlocked a key element to how cancer works, and this accomplishment might well lead to a treatment that could save millions of lives a year. Now, think about this as a normal earthling, and maybe you've known someone who's battled cancer, maybe you've dealt with it yourself. What would such a cure, what would such a treatment mean in your life, to the people around you, to the people you know? Important, right? Look at it as an alien. How would you rate it? How would you think the response should be, with an alien hat, how do you think the response should be to something that big? Second event is that the Yankees won the World Series. I want you just to look at this as an alien. How many lives does this save? How many people does this impact? How many lives does this truly transform in a way that can say, okay, this person can go on to raise their children, go on to raise their grandchildren? How important is it just from the point of view of an outside observer, an extraterrestrial observer? Now, you're in your spaceship. You're looking at these two groups of people. One has set the stage for saving millions of lives. One's played a lot of really good ball games. Which one would you consider from space? Which one would you consider should be getting the parade? Come back to being an earthling. Which one would you consider probably will get the parade? And which one do you think did? I'm going to argue that the reason the alien would almost certainly pick the biologists is the exact same reason, the exact same thinking that we down on Earth go for the sports team. Because they're both on an instinct level. They're both on a deep level about survival. We carry a primal sort of memory from our ancestors, a survival-level instinct. We needed it. We would never have survived without it. We would never have evolved without it. And sports are the outgrowth of those instincts, of those skills, of those abilities. And that's why we respond so strongly to it. The guy who can run faster can catch the prey, and he can bring the food back to the clan. We need him. We need someone that can do that in order to survive as a people. We honor that ability for that. Yeah, sure, nowadays everything is farmed and everything is nice and compartmentalized, but on that instinct level, we know the fast guy's going to catch dinner. The guy who hits the hardest, he's the guy that can drive off enemies. He's the guy that can drive off predators. He's the guy that can keep the wolves out of the village, the cave, whatever. He's the guy that keeps the bad things away. So, yeah, we respond to someone who can hit a lot of home runs because we know that kind of strength is the kind of strength that we respond to primally as the one who can protect us. Interestingly, we also had a Veterans Day parade recently, and less than half the number of people attended that parade as attended the Yankees parade. And that seems contradictory to the idea of, well, the person who protects us is the person we honor most. But it's not entirely contradictory. Yes. These are the people who really do protect us. These are the people who really do fight for us. These are the people who really are keeping the enemy outside of our gates. But they're kind of doing it at a distance. They're not immediate. They're a vague, yeah, we know there's a bunch of people out there, but we don't see the day-to-day activities of each one. But on TV, we see a specific player slide into home. We see a specific player hit a home run. We don't see a specific soldier dive into a foxhole. We don't see a specific soldier shooting. We don't have that immediate connection. That's why in fiction, a lot of the older stories you'll read will have like, and then the three astronauts all said, and we've gotten past that because we need the immediacy. We need Joe said, Lisa thought. No, it's no longer, if you go back and read the Martian Chronicles, you'll see a lot of times, and then all three crew members cheered, and then they all said, and as storytelling techniques have evolved even over that shorter period of time, we sort of move away from this. But the soldiers are at a distance, and the baseball players are close, and we respond viscerally to that which is close, that which is immediate. Now, what primitive survival needs did your story people have way back in their beginning? What skills were needed for your aliens to survive on their world in the infancy of their species? What embodied the difference between life and death for your creatures way back before they tamed their world? How does that play out today? How is that reenacted today? Because that is a need that will be reenacted. And we see it in a lot of things. Thin is in now because it's a survival trait. Overweight people face greater health risks, so we favor slenderness. Once upon a time, it was glorious to be fat because that meant a person never had to do without and was therefore safe from the illness and the problems caused by deprivation. It all comes back to primal instinct for survival. What spells survival? Generally spells privilege. Obviously, the people who have are going to want the things that are going to help them live longer, better lives. But how does that play out? How does that play out in your world with your creatures? What's going to be popular because at some level it means, what's going to be popular because at some level it means or recently meant living longer? Maybe your characters choose to say, oh, someone who is taller is more desirable because that means they have been able to avoid the heavy gravity, dangerous slum-like areas and have lived on the high mountains where the gravity is lighter and therefore they can grow taller. Now look at your world as someone that's alien to that world. What choices do they make that under the cold light of logic seems wrong but are totally right and true for the people living inside of that culture? Things are also often trapped, I keep saying this, trapped in the amber of society. And we're actually in the middle of watching such a transition right now, a catching up in the amber, or more to the point, a passing on of an iconography. And there was a whole to-do over on Farmville on Facebook, in the forums, about naming the tree the holiday tree. A lot of people didn't like that. Well, if you want to go back to its true and proper name, it's a Saturnalia tree. This is a tree that is green, is verdant, is living in the dead of winter, a rare thing, and it was sacred to Jupiter, the king of the Roman gods. Remember, the Christians grabbed a real foothold in Rome. So it was, at the time, mandatory that one trap out all the signs of honor to the Roman god. Goes back to survival. If you go back to early Rome, if you go back to those societies, you get an understanding that worship is a form of commerce. You pay the god whatever his tribute is, and you receive goods and services in response. You give Set beer, he keeps the sun from getting eaten. You give Ra myrrh, he brings the sun up every day. You give Jupiter his holly, his trees, his decorations. He makes sure next year's crop shows up. Pretty much a simple trade. But if somebody didn't make the trade, if somebody didn't pay their dues, then the crops weren't going to come up next year. The people were going to starve. The Romans took this really deadly seriously. So it was illegal not to pay the god his due. They didn't honestly care if you wanted to pay 700 other gods their due. Okay, as long as they're doing good for the country, more power to them. But you have to pay the main gods of the country their due. The ones who defend the country, you pay them their salary. The ones who bring the crops, you give them their salary. The ones who bring the sun, the water, whatever is needed, you make sure that they're, you know, you make sure your electric bill is paid, your rent is paid, your water is paid, your God is paid. It's pretty much the same thing. So the Christians would, early on, they would put up holly and trees and the like because they were commanded to by the government, and they didn't want to get into trouble with the government. And slowly they started to abscond with it. They started to change the traditions. They brought new decorations to the tree, the angels, the star. In Germany, they finally decided to bring it indoors. This was a kind of taking what had been, making it their own, transforming it, and bringing it forth. So it goes from being a Roman image to a Christian image. And now it's transitioning again. The secular society is trying to lay claim to it. So it's now going from a Christian image, a Christmas tree, to a secular image, a holiday tree. And over the centuries, it's likely to transition again and again and again as different groups claim it for different needs. A lot of icons, a lot of images are used, transformed, reclaimed. And you're going to have that on your world as well. You're going to have things that represent societies that no longer exist, or that barely, that exist in such a transformed way that they are unrecognizable from what they originally were. But a lot of their trappings, from the times they were the hegemon, by the times they were the dominant culture, are going to be hanging around in little ways. A lot of things that have already transitioned, just a simple Christian to secular transition, is crossing one's fingers. It used to be a Christian thing. It used to be, it's another cross image. And now it's just the thing everybody does for luck. And those are things that your society kind of catches, holds to. They're going to enrich your world. You don't even really need to explain them. Your character is not going to sit around and think, well, that used to belong to the moon goddess, but then the sun god cult gained prominence, and so it transitioned from a nighttime ritual to a daytime. But it's going to be there. It's going to make the world seem a little alien, and if done well, at the same time, really sensible. And it's that act of second creation. We've spoken of that. That's Tolkien's term of that secondary creation. It's that that's going to make a science fiction fantasy world so much richer. The other thing to pay attention to, and the other thing we're seeing today that will be happening in your world, is at a moment of transition, you're going to have three camps. You're going to have one camp that's going to be very conservative, that's going to say, it was always this, and it should always remain this. It was always for Jupiter. It was always Christian, and it must remain that. You're going to have a progressive group that's going to say, hey, you know, why don't we transition it to that? It's the future. It looks cool. And then you're going to have the people who really don't care one way or another. And the percentage for each is going to change year to year as people change their mind or come to different understandings, or as more people, you know, as society itself changes, children are born, old people die, and the mix alters. These transitions don't happen quickly. The one thing that is near constant is that the progressives win. Society never goes backward. You can find only a handful of cases in all of human history where something was, becomes something new, and goes back to the way it was, completely untouched by what had happened in the intervening years. When societies attempt this, and ancient Egypt did this all the time, it's interesting to see what they have kept, even as they claim to transition. When change can be undone, it's usually a matter of change. It's not a matter of rolling back the clock. It's a matter of changing anew. So, again, going back to the whole Christmas tree example, it may be that we're going to say, okay, you know what? We're going to reclaim. We're going to leave this whole holiday tree nonsense out there, but we're going to reclaim sort of a sacred incarnation of the Christmas tree. It's not just going to be this thing with lots of lights and snowmen on it. It's going to be some deep and meaningful iconography that is going to be brought into church service. And then it will have a different place in the liturgical calendar, a different place in the tradition. But it will be, again, wholly owned by the tradition. That would be one way that it might end up that you have in 50, 100 years, a Christmas tree being a Christmas thing. I do see it going to being a more secular thing. It's the way societies just do stuff. They evolve, they grasp things, and they take them and they own them. They repurpose them. We repurpose all the time. We are great, iconic recyclers. We recycle icons all the time. And the reason you need to keep things is to ease the transition, because societies, people need that sense of continuity. If we were to say, okay, as of tomorrow, the culture in the United States is suddenly going to transition. Everyone be ready. At 12 o'clock, we're all following the traditions and the rituals that were appropriate in Japan in the early Tokugawa era. We would have no idea what to do. It's a perfectly functional society. It lasted for centuries. It lasted for 300 years. We would have no idea what to do. We need what is familiar. We need to understand and build on what we have. If you grab someone from the early Tokugawa era, if you grab, say, a servant of Ieyasu Tokugawa, and you put him at the end of the Tokugawa era, and you put him in the court of Yoshinobu Tokugawa, even within the same country, even within the same age, 3-century difference, he'd be bewildered. But the whole country went through going from one to the other easily. So that is kind of what I'm trying to get at, is that is why we capture stuff in the amber, and that is how we capture stuff in the amber, and that is why your aliens are going to capture stuff in the amber, and that is how they're going to capture stuff in the amber. If they didn't, if they totally let go and said, you know what had been, we're not going to do anymore. Okay, we've decided that we're just going to change this culture, so as of tomorrow, everything that had been is going to be gone, and everything that is going to be, you know, we'll send out a pamphlet and we'll explain the whole new series of etiquette, the entire new series of how people behave. We're just going to give out books on etiquette, and everyone has to learn it by the time the transition happens, because that's just going to be how we do things. No one would be able to function. If they could function, wouldn't that be an interesting society to be in, to be an alien? You've landed. You started to acclimate, and then you get the pamphlet, and the next day everybody's acting completely differently. And you've gotten used to, maybe you tip your hat to a stranger, and then suddenly that's considered inappropriate. You don't do that anymore, because, you know, that was what we did in the old era that ended on Monday. Now it's Tuesday. We don't do this. It would be kind of an interesting world. It would be a hard world to deal with, but it would be an interesting world. And watching how the natives function against that, and how often the transition happens. Is this something they've read in the history books? Okay, there have been transition moments. Or is this something that every 10 years we elect a new leader, and that leader says, okay, here's how we're running the society. He's inaugurated, and all the transitions, all the traditions just flip and become something new. And maybe people will vote based on what traditions he wants to instill or get rid of, or how he wants to run things on that sort of a level. It could be kind of fun. But your prompt for this time is to look around and see what we've trapped in our cultural amber, and try to find at least 5 things this week that only make sense to us because of what has been before. They are things of continuity that go back to a time when they were either necessary or that represent an older culture. That should wrap us up for this time. Until next time, feed the muse and keep writing. Some of the music provided tonight from the Pod Show, PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.
Look up and reach down to a box of dreams and pick anyone you like. Choose the one that will make you the happiest, but you gotta picture it.